But you can't control something you call technology because you can't find it to control. Part of what I try to do in the book is to just demonstrate what a range of technologies are all around us, are in our lives, are in the world. They're part of how we understand the world. They're part of how we live ourselves. And some parts of them seem terribly new and unfamiliar, but we are augmented animals with vaccines in our veins and eyeglasses on our noses and telephones and radios that we communicate with each other across the country with.
As Stuart Brand says, we better get used to using it, or rather, get good at using it. We got to wrap. That's it. We'll have a lot more to say about technology, folks. So see you tonight at the We the People Center if you're in the Bay Area. Thank you very much, Jim Bennett and Tom Whalen and Walter Truett Anderson, author of Evolution Isn't What It Used to Be. Good night.
If the idea of technology excites you, well, you're in the right place, because this is WBAI New York, and it's just about 8 o'clock. Stay tuned. Off the Hook is coming up right after this important announcement.
What if you found out that those fresh fruits and vegetables everyone keeps telling you to eat more of might kill you? And what if we told you that everyone knows this, the government, the farmers, even the supermarkets where you buy them? The fact is, if you buy fresh peas, peppers, squash, strawberries, apples, pears, or even canned baby food, you may have put toxic pesticides on your table and not even known it. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, over 50 ingredients found in toxic pesticides in use today are suspected of causing cancer in humans. And Congress wants to weaken the current regulations. Regulations which already allow cancer-causing pesticides into our food supply. So if you want to stop eating toxic pesticides, you're going to have to take action. Tell your supermarket manager you're opposed to having toxic pesticides in the foods you eat and you don't like shopping in stores that carry them. We're Food and Water Incorporated. For more information, call us at 1-800-EAT-SAFE. It's a free call. That's 1-800-EAT-SAFE.
It's 8 o'clock, time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. I couldn't get much work, but if they could, they would. Oh, they live on for the best, it takes the worst. I hope that's understood, but they live on.
Good evening to everybody. This is Off the Hook, the weekly program that comes to you and talks about all kinds of neat things like the internet, the phone company, the growing mergers of all the huge corporations in the world, and the advances of Big Brother, and how we are all doomed. But we're not doomed yet, and we can have a lot of fun along the way. We're not always that pessimistic, but sometimes you have to wonder, you know, it's... You see all these censorship issues occurring, you see all these... ways of controlling people being implemented, and just have to wonder, where is it all going to end? We have some interesting bits of news, updates, theories, and things like that. We should be hearing from Bernie S. in a little while. Interesting editorial today in today's New York Times called Censorship in Cyberspace. Yeah, the New York Times. How about that? Congress acted without thinking when it decided 3 months ago to censor the growing web of computer networks in the name of protecting children. It held no hearings and made no effort to learn how the Internet actually works. Had it done so, it would have discovered that the Communications Decency Act was an unconstitutional and wholly unnecessary infringement on free speech. What we've been saying all along. Now the New York Times is saying it. Not surprisingly, the law was quickly challenged. A panel of three federal judges will soon hear closing arguments. It's a landmark case that will help determine how the First Amendment, an 18th century creation, will apply to the communication technologies of the 21st century. However rules, the panel has been far better informed about these technologies than Congress was. The case was brought by the American Civil Liberties Union and a coalition including the American Library Association, journalism and publishing groups, and online service companies. The law makes it a felony to knowingly transmit indecent or patently offensive sexual material over networks where children may see it. In other words, just about anything could be considered illegal, because indecency is something that's very vaguely defined. And it's what keeps things like radio and television in such a tight vice. That's why the worlds you see on TV don't even reflect any kind of world that exists today. But the reason for that is because people like this are able to control it, to make it so that the slightest reference to something that they consider to be objectionable is just stricken, won't be mentioned at all. It's really something. In February, continuing with the editorial, in February, one of the three judges issued a preliminary ruling that the provision barring indecent material was unconstitutionally vague, but the judge declined to rule against other portions of the law that also imposed standards of speech on the Internet and other computer-based communications networks more restrictive than those imposed on books, newspapers, or other printed material. Should these provisions survive, there is concern that libraries could face criminal sanctions for making their collections available online, and that the reporting of news stories could at some future time be chilled as newspapers and magazines increasingly offer online versions. That would be a ridiculous outcome. There is simply no legal or practical justification for this dichotomy, which would have the effect of reducing the otherwise lawful material available on the Internet to a level judged appropriate for children, something the Supreme Court has already said should not be done. At hearings just concluded in Philadelphia, the judges were given a crash course on how the Internet actually works. They learned that while on radio and television, children can stumble across inappropriately explicit material simply by turning the set on, computer users must actively seek out the material they want to view. The judges were also given a demonstration of readily available and rapidly improving software that parents can now use to block transmissions they do not want their children to see. And that is a far better solution, practically and constitutionally, than punishing those who transmit explicit material. The critical task now for the newly educated three-judge panel is to recognize the large threat to free speech the statute poses, and to develop an approach to speech on the Internet that gives maximum room for the free exchange of ideas. You know, what's amazing is that people on all sides seem to be saying the same thing. You know, I was listening to that guy on the way into the station tonight. That guy that got kicked off the other radio station is now on this other station. It's Bob Grandperson, and he's going crazy about how the liberals are trying to censor everybody, and you know the liberals are going crazy about how the conservatives are trying to censor everybody. Everybody is saying censorship is a bad thing. So who are all these censors? Who are the censors? Are they the liberals? Are they the conservatives? Or are they just a bunch of stupid people that you know nobody can seem to control or rein in? I don't know, but everyone seems to have different views on it, and we seem to agree on other matters. I don't know why it's so hard to get these views out and to actually keep these unpleasant things from happening all the time. A couple other things that have been thrown my way. This is an article, actually, that appeared last month in the Wall Street Journal, and it reads in such a way that it's kind of something I think we all should know about. Consumer rights advocates are sounding alarms about a new law giving the Federal Bureau of Investigation easier access to credit report information. The little-noticed law, enacted in January as part of the Intelligence Authorization Act of 1996, has an ominous ring to it, doesn't it? The Intelligence Authorization Act of 1996, allows FBI officials to obtain key information from a person's credit file without seeking a judge's permission. Investigators still need a court order or a federal grand jury subpoena to view someone's full credit report, but they can get basic information with only written authorization from the head of the FBI or his designee if there's reason to suspect a person is a spy or terrorist or has had contact with one. With 1,500 terrorist groups operating in the United States, according to various sources, who knows? The basic information available under the new law includes a person's employment history, addresses, and a list of lenders and other financial institutions with which the person has or had relationships. And to avoid tipping off suspects to an investigation, the new law also requires credit bureaus to keep secret any FBI request to review a credit report. Unbelievable. And we have this report in from some magazine. You know what this is? Okay. Somehow I wound up on the Michigan Militia mailing list. I don't know how this happened. I didn't do it myself. One of you probably did it. But I do get some very interesting bits of news sometimes from that particular neck of the woods. But I also get some other weird stuff that I'll also share with you that they send out. Few people would dispute that the United States is among the freest nations in the world. Okay, but that could change overnight if several pilot projects funded by a federal grant prove to be as effective as some law enforcement officials expect. Police, I think this is Redwood City, unless there's a place called Pedwood City, but police somewhere in California recently began using sophisticated hidden listening devices to patrol high crime areas where gunfire has become all too common. Have you heard about this? They actually are monitoring for certain sounds. They're so sensitive that gunfire can be traced to within 10 yards of its place of origin. Ain't that something? 10 yards of its place of origin. In addition, authorities are installing cameras capable of monitoring areas as large as 16 city blocks. And that'll be on a 24-hour-a-day basis, high above the streets. Similar setups are being considered in other cities and may soon appear in the nation's capital, which is a notorious center of violence and illicit drug activity. And if the devices enhance police effectiveness, other cities may be outfitted with similar equipment. Imagine a seeing eye camera looming overhead every day on the streets of your town. Through the use of such audio and video devices, police will be able to compile a round-the-clock record of nearly every event that transpires on the streets, on the sidewalks, and in the alleys in a wired neighborhood. Some equipment is capable of peeking inside windows and detecting such things as small marijuana farms flourishing under artificial lights. Many citizens believe their lives will be safer as a result of these surveillance cameras and listening devices, but their use inevitably raises privacy concerns, especially if the authorities probe outside a public space. Police concede, for example, that they would have the capability to listen in on conversations in private homes. Well, it makes things safer. Is that so much to give up? Already, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit in Denver has ventured into the legal quagmire that may result. It ruled that police can't use an imager to scan homes without first obtaining search warrants. And the thing with search warrants, though, is usually you know when they've been served, you know, because all these, like, you know, men come into your house and rummage about. But here they'll just be sort of scanning you. And unless you have a long-range scan detector installed in your house, I don't think you're going to know that they're doing this. Other courts have held that using the imagers do not infringe upon Fourth Amendment protection against unreasonable search and seizure. Interesting point of view they have over there. Randall Coyne, a professor of law at the University of Oklahoma and a specialist in privacy issues, said in an interview that such devices in and of themselves constitute an illegal search. Placing cameras and listening devices in high crime areas won't resolve problems of violence and drugs, he said. Dealers will simply scatter to less crowded areas, away from hangouts known to police. An Upper Chichester, Pennsylvania housewife said she thinks the equipment represents an invasion of her privacy. If I lived in a high crime area, I think I would look at it differently. I don't think I'd want to be monitored every time I walked out of my house. The all-seeing camera would see me whether I liked it or not. I'm not sure I could get used to that sort of thing. In Camden, New Jersey, 23-year-old Carlos Rodriguez, who works in a fast food restaurant, looked at the surveillance equipment in a different way. I'm glad to hear about it. It sounds just like what we need in Camden. Guys are shooting up the place every day. Drug deals go down day and night. Nobody's safe here. The police can't solve our problems, so we need something like cameras on the street. Then, the law would see just who's perpetrating these crimes that leave our people dead. I hope they bring the equipment to Camden, and I hope they do it soon. Well, you know, I don't know how much stock to place in this article because, as I said, it came from a militia group, but I think the concerns are pretty much the same. The concerns are the same as far as privacy. But, you know, you gotta look at this a little bit carefully, because they also included a bunch of definitions along with this story, which I think some of which should be read only so that you can see where this particular group is coming from. For instance, they define the word racist as disagreeing with such racist programs as affirmative action and quotas, anti-Semitic, disagreeing with the Israeli lobby, especially on its claim to the U.S. Treasury. Fascist is anyone disagreeing with socialism. Bigotry is belief in the Judeo-Christian morality. Isolationist, someone who believes American armed forces should defend America and American interests. And, you know, it goes on. Anti-environment is a belief in property rights. A homophobic, disagreeing with any part of the homosexual political agenda. Sexist, disagreeing with any part of the feminist agenda. So obviously these people are, like, you know, somewhere, you know, in their own little world over there. But the concerns when it comes to privacy things, if they can alert us to certain ways that our privacy is being invaded, they may be the first ones to hear about it. Unfortunately, the way, reading over their material, it just appears that they're most concerned with things that affect them, and not things that affect others who may not agree with them at all. And that's what I think the difference with what we do here is, because we try and see how other people's rights will be violated, even if they have nothing in common with us at all, because eventually it will have something to do with us. And that's what we all have to be concerned with. Okay, let's see if we can get Bernie S. on the phone. Not sure if he's calling in yet, but let's give it a try. Good evening. You know, I could tell by the way that hung out that was Bernie S. No, I could, because that phone system in the prison over there in Pennsylvania has a certain way of reacting to my voice. And it hangs up at just a particular moment in just a particular manner. No, I know. 212-279-3400 is our phone number. Don't call that yet, though, because we're not taking phone calls just yet. We will be in a few minutes. But write that number down. Good evening.
AT&T has a collect call from
Bernie S.
at the Bucks County Correctional Facility. To refuse this call, hang up. If you accept this call, do not use three-way or call waiting features, or you will be disconnected. To accept this call, dial 1 now. Thank you.
Well, good evening, Bernie S.
Hi. I see we had the same problems getting through to you tonight.
Well, actually, we just got hung up on once, so it wasn't that big a deal.
Oh, it's improving.
Actually, it was choreographed very well, because we just finished with a certain story, and you called in just like that, almost as if you were in the studio and we cued you to call at just that moment.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, I've got some good news for you, actually, sort of a story behind something that we did this weekend. We had a bit of an adventure. We set out to get Bernie S. a television set. Yes, and that was really exciting, because we thought that it would be a little bit difficult. You know, we didn't think it would be as difficult as it turned out being. Bernie, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about what it takes to get a TV set sent in there.
Well, apparently it's not as simple as one might think. According to the rules of the Bucks County Correctional Facility, the TVs must be sent in from an outside store. In other words, an individual can't just send a TV set. Apparently, the prison is afraid people will conceal contraband inside the TV set, like drugs or weapons or something like that. So it has to be sent in from the store itself. And once it's here, it has to be engraved with my name and inmate number. And then I have to sign a special contract agreeing not to modify it in any way. If if it's found in my possession, missing a knob or something, that's confiscated as contraband.
That's right. And, you know, the interesting thing, I have the rules right here, actually. When it's confiscated as contraband, it's donated to charity. So they take contraband and they give it to charity. Did you know that?
Of their choosing.
Yeah. I don't know what they have going there, but obviously there's something happening. Okay, this is it. Agreement regarding television purchases. This is the piece of paper that we had to go around to various stores and show them. I agree. This is something that I guess you would fill out, Bernie. Yes. I agree to the following guidelines regarding the outside purchase by a relative or friend of a television and its use at the Bucks County Correctional Facility. Number one, the television must be purchased at an easily identifiable vendor such as Kmart, JCPenney, Best, Ports, Bradley's, Circuit City, Walmart, American Appliance, Plavin, etc. You know, I've never heard of half these. Plavin? Has anyone in the room heard of Plavin? You ever heard of Plavin, Bernie? No, he's speechless.
Probably some business locally owned by the Wardens.
Okay. That's probably true. Okay, now this is what they underline here. Rule number two. This is very important. The television must be sent directly from the store. It must be unopened and shipped directly to the Bucks County Correctional Facility. It may not be personally delivered here to the facility. It must be clearly marked for the inmate. Otherwise, it will be returned. Number three, the television must meet strict specifications. Diagonally measured 12-inch black and white or 13-inch color model only, no larger or smaller. Bernie, do you have any idea why they only allow 12-inch black and whites and 13-inch colors and no variation?
Well, I can see their concern in not wanting one of these 60-inch widescreen TVs sent in because you might have trouble fitting it through the door to your cell. Bernie,
can I just break in first? I hear sirens. You're in a prison. What kind of sirens?
Well, actually, some inmates are watching a cops and robbers show.
Oh, okay.
That seems to be one of the favorite programs here.
Okay, sirens in a prison are always something to be, concerned with.
I don't see what their objection is to having one of these small portable TV sets, but I think that would make more sense because it takes up less space. But I guess they want consistency.
That's right. Well, okay, continuing with the rules here. No remote control, no earphones, no batteries, no other attachments, including VCRs, no power packs for plugs, must be programmable from the TV itself, must have a dial or menu button on the TV itself, no detachable speakers are permitted, must be AC, 120 volts, and no detachable speakers. They did just say that, but they said it twice. I guess that's the most important thing. No detachable speakers.
They want to make sure you didn't misunderstand it. You couldn't have a left speaker and a right speaker, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, one's for the left, one's for the right. Any other models will be returned. Any attachments such as remote controls, if included by the manufacturer, will be removed by the commissary officer and placed in your personal property. A receipt will be generated and delivered to you. Number four, the inmate will be inspected by security before being labeled with the inmate's name. Removal of the identification shall require the confiscation of the television as contraband. Any warranty and or repairs are the responsibility of the inmate. All repairs will go to the commissary officer for packing and shipping. So I guess they stick your name on the thing. And you have
to engrave it with a special engraving tool.
They engrave it? Wow.
For the set, apparently. I have some interesting news about why they don't allow the remote controls in here. One of the other inmates explained to me why, and that is the prison administration is concerned that inmates could use the remote controls for the TV sets to also control the electrically operated door locks located throughout the prison and use it to escape.
That's something I never would have thought of.
Well, they think of everything here. One inmate got a television set. It didn't have a front panel on it. You had to program it from the remote. Once you did that, you could then step through the channels. But in any case, they sent two guards in, armed with clubs, batons, escorting this remote control in to this particular inmate and stood in his cell, watching him program it. And then when he was done programming it, they took it back out of the prison. So they were very, very, very cautious about making sure that the remote control was not used, for escape purposes.
Wow, that's something. Continuing, number five, reception varies within the institution. We will not be responsible for poor reception. Number six, the television may never leave the cell of the owner. Number seven, the television may not be lent, given, sold, or in any other way be transferred to other inmate for any reason. Number eight, if the television is found outside the cell of the owner and in the possession of another inmate, Both the owner and the person who has it will be held responsible, and the TV will be confiscated as contraband. Both inmates will receive a misconduct report and will not be permitted to purchase a television for the remainder of this incarceration. Pretty harsh there, just for lending a TV set out.
Well, if you lend your TV set out, you would go to the hole for 3 days, and the person you lend it to would go to the hole for 3 days, too. It's a place where they just don't feed you very much, and you're locked up 24 hours a day, and it's generally very unpleasant.
It's that primordial, prison place that that everybody has nightmares about being in, cold. And
good news and some bad news about that TV set. And by the way, thank you very much for your generosity.
Well, no, I don't want to give away too much, because you've sort of hinted that we succeeded, but there's a whole big story behind this, which I haven't even started yet. I was trying to get into these rules a little bit more. There's nothing really major left, I don't think, that I've left out. If a television is located that has not been removed from the institution by the owner and is in the possession of another inmate, disciplinary action will be taken on that inmate, and the item will be confiscated as contraband. Same thing if any wires are altered or knobs are missing. Items confiscated as contraband will not be returned, but will be donated to an accredited charity of our choice. I wonder if that includes drugs and things like that. Okay, that's basically it as far as the whole TV rules and regulations. Now, we went to a couple of places. We went to J&R, and guess what? They told us that they have a policy of not sending to prisons. It's like, they're the opposite of your bureaucracy. They're sort of meant to counter and wipe into nothingness anything that you try to do. So while the prison says it has to be sent by a manufacturer, the manufacturer says, we do not send to prisons. So there doesn't seem to be a way around it, at least with J&R. We went to the Wiz. We had one all picked out. The guy said there was no problem until he talked to somebody in the central Wiz office, which I guess is somewhere in New Jersey, and they said it was just a corporate policy. And what corporate policy means is that there's no way you can ever question it. And I was watching these guys at the Wiz. They're really, they got like whips and chains over them. To make a phone call, they have to go to the front of the store and get the security guard to give them a line. The security guy that checks everything on the way out. And they can't even make a phone call without him pressing the button and dialing for them. It's almost like they're in prison themselves. You'd think they'd understand, but no, they don't. So then we went to Caldor's. All right, Caldor's is just this other department store. We thought maybe a department store wouldn't be, as privy to all these rules and regulations, and they would just say, yeah, you want to pay for something, you want to buy it, fine, we'll send it wherever you want. Because, we were at the Wiz and J&R waving money at them, saying, look, here is money. We're giving you money. Just send it here. That's all we're asking. And they wouldn't do it. So we went to the Caldor's, found another TV set. This is our third TV set now. We said, okay, now, here's the thing. Can you send that to a prison? And they said, yeah, I don't see why not. Where's the prison? And then we said the prison's in Pennsylvania. And they said, well, the thing is, we ship with a special local company, and you pay by the mile outside a 10-mile range. So, and this is the manager talking to us, you'd be paying out the butt for this thing, whatever that means. And I guess it's like a Caldor type of euphemism. And so he said, basically you should probably go to someplace like Service Merchandise, because I used to work there, and they recognize an opportunity to make money, which is what no one else seemed to be able to do. So we went down to Service Merchandise and went through the whole big thing all over again. And guess what? We got to the point where they agreed to send it everywhere. And then they used the same local delivery people, and they would be charging us by the mile as well. They suggested that we contact their mail order place instead, and not use the local store. So we went to Service Merchandise for no reason at all, but we wound up calling the Service Merchandise mail order place from the store itself, and that's where we actually got them to agree to send it out. Now, the interesting thing is, while standing there in Service Merchandise, they have a bunch of computer terminals there, and the purpose of these terminals is to add you to the mailing list, so that if you just can't wait for your next visit to Service Merchandise, and you want to have a catalog sent to you, you can just type in your info right then and there. Now, the funny thing about this is, if you're already on their mailing list, they don't want to have to send it to you again. So they ask you for your phone number. And if you enter your phone number, and you're already on their mailing list, they greet you by name. And this works for anywhere in the country. You just enter someone's phone number, and it says, hello, Wallace, how are you today? Or whatever the name might happen to be. Hello, Beatrice, or whatnot. It's a great way to check to see if you have the right phone number for somebody. You don't get the last name, but you do get the first name. It's kind of funny how people just go in there and they give their unlisted phone numbers to service merchandise without thinking anything of it and give their first name as well. You might want to try this. You might want to check it out. And also, of course, you can change whatever gets sent out to these people. The really odd thing about it, though, is we couldn't figure out a way to get out of the system when we were in it. We'd hit the cancel button, and what the cancel button did was it inserted the letters C-A-N, you know, for cancel on every field. So we had someone whose first name was Can, last name Can, address Can, city Can, state Can, and then it got to the zip code, and it didn't accept Can because it only accepted numbers for that. There was absolutely nothing we can do. We wound up changing about 14 people's names to Can. And so if you ever get something in the mail addressed that way, that's why. The software is not exactly optimal, in my view. So that was our service merchandise adventure. But I think eventually we wound up sending you a TV set. Now, you said there's good news and bad news. What does that mean?
Well, the good news is a guard approached me this morning and said, Cummings, your television has arrived.
Ah.
Oh, good. How do I get it? He said, all you have to do is fill out one of these contract agreements and send it up to the warden's office, and then they will engrave the set and bring it to you. I said, okay, well, how do I get one of those forms? He said, it should be in the storage room here. So I went to the storage room, and there were no forms. So I said, well, how can I get one? He said, well, talk to the lieutenant. So at lunchtime, when I got to see the lieutenant, I spoke with him, and he said, oh, those forms. Well, we're out of those forms. There aren't any more right now.
There aren't any forms.
You can't have your TV set until you fill out one of these forms.
Have they ever heard of a Xerox machine?
You don't, out of forms. Said, well,
it's not like food, you know. You can just copy it and make new ones.
Well, I said, you know, isn't there an original somewhere? And they said, well, you're just going to have to wait until we make more copies. I said, well, when will that be? I can't tell you. Just as soon as we get around to it. I said, well, my TV is here, and all I want to do is sign this form so I can get my set. He said, you're just going to have to wait for these forms available. It may be tomorrow. It might be next week. It might be next month. So the TV is here. But until I have this form to sign, I think you're the one, you're holding a copy of one right there. Maybe you could mail me a copy of that form, and then hopefully they won't confiscate it. Then I can fill it out and then get the TV set.
I don't believe this. I have the form you need, and you can't get a hold of it. I'll send a copy to you. I don't want to get you in trouble or something by sending this copy of this dot matrix form that they sent out.
That's the status of it. The TV is here, but it's in storage now because I can't sign the form that they don't have.
Okay, well, listen, update me on this in the couple of days ahead, and if it's the situation hasn't changed, then we'll have to do that, obviously.
Okay.
Typical.
Thanks again for your
effort. Oh, yeah, it's a never-ending saga, I guess. And, of course, the thing probably won't work when you turn it on, and that's going to start a whole...
I was really concerned that a knob might break off or something, and then it would be classified as contraband.
Uh-huh.
No, just inadvertently, you know, the knob, sometimes that happens, knobs break off of things, and then it's changed from its original state, and then it can be confiscated and given away to the charity of their choosing. So I hope it arrived intact.
What kind of charity would need knobs? I don't know. All right, let's going to take some phone calls. We're going to take some phone calls here, 212-279-3400. We're talking about various privacy issues and other developments.
I have some interesting news about computer privacy issues.
Okay, what do you have?
Next Friday, you may have already mentioned this, I don't know, but next Friday, May 10th, the Third Circuit Federal Court of Appeals in Philadelphia will begin hearing oral arguments for and against the Communications Decency Act, mm-hmm. provision of the Communications Act 1995. The ACLU, EPIC, and I think the EFF will argue next Friday in Philadelphia that the term indecent is unconstitutionally vague, and it's also the act also goes against the First Amendment. It's the same void for vagueness doctrine that I'm using in my federal appeal. Only the vagueness in my case pertains to different words. But in any case, next Friday at 6 and Market Street in Philadelphia, the verbal arguments will occur. I spoke with someone with EPIC last week. He told me, and he's going to be one of his partners will be giving oral arguments next Friday. He said they expect a challenge from the government if they win, and at that point it'll go to the Supreme Court. So it should be interesting. If anybody's in the Philadelphia area or wants to go to Philadelphia next Friday to 6th and Market Street to hear the fight, it should be interesting.
Okay, it's not this Friday coming up. It's the one after that, right?
May 10th.
Okay, yeah, we mentioned it. We just didn't have the exact date, but that's pretty helpful information to have. and something I hope the media will be following closely. And, you know, if, let me ask you your view on this, actually. The whole indecency thing, as it applies to radio and television, if they are able to, I mean, they already have passed this, this little V-chip thing. Once that is installed, will there be anything preventing TV and radio, or I guess just TV since it's for TV, anything preventing television from actually airing programs that are somewhat normal as far as language and you know, and things that they show? Like, it won't have to be geared towards some farmer in Idaho someplace that might get offended. Do you think having a V-chip that you can turn off certain bits of objectionable material, do you think that will have an effect on that? Do you think it will actually do something good?
In a way, I do know that the television programming industry was looking forward to this whole V-chip legislation going through, because they were always worried about blanket restrictions, and now the restrictions apparently will be specialized, and they can let out material in different, you know, different levels of violence or sexual orientation or whatever else is going to be censored by the V-chip. Although there hasn't been any other proposed legislation I know of to lessen the existing regulations as far as what can be aired. But it certainly would give one a logical argument to say, well, let's program something that's you know, more in line with movies that you see in a movie theater than the television code that exists now.
Well, I mean, the thing is, if they're able to rule that indecency, the indecency standard is unconstitutional, would it not apply then that the way the indecency standard is applied to television and radio, that also is unconstitutional?
Sure, but that's been tried in the Supreme Court and tested, and the Supreme Court ruled that it was not unconstitutional to have the FCC regulate the type of material that gets broadcast.
But at the time, there was no way to block it out. And now that they've insisted on having this way of blocking out quote-unquote objectionable material, I see no reason why this can't be overturned.
I agree with you. I think it'll be interesting to see once they're available widely. I think next year they go into effect, or they have to. You know when that is, when they have to put the chips in?
I think it's the beginning of 1997. Yeah, that's what I believe.
Yeah, I know it's already required that all the sets have to have closed caption decoders for hearing impaired people. So I guess we'll just add some extra software to the computer circuitry that's already in there to these V-chip functions. I think they should have a whole section of other codes, censorship codes, you know, not just a V-chip, but a P-chip to block out annoying politicians, or you know, whatever other kind of initials you can come up with to block things that you don't want to hear. Or how about a G-chip to block out Geraldo Rivera?
There you go, an HS-chip to block out home shopping. That's my personal favorite. All right, let's take some phone calls. 212-279-3400 is our phone number. The program is Off the Hook. Good evening. You are our first caller.
Manuel Goldstein?
That's me, and you are on the air.
I'd like to bring up a certain point here.
Okay, go right ahead.
What would happen if this TV monitoring of our streets, what happens if someone manages to tap these phone lines, these television lines?
Mm-hmm.
Then, in theory, wouldn't that person, whoever managed get a hold of this thing, have access to what people are doing inside their homes, everyone else?
Okay, you're referring to what we were talking about a little earlier, where there's certain local police departments that are experimenting with devices that can actually pinpoint the location of a gunshot, and also could be used to monitor things that are going on inside a house. And you're asking if somebody is able to sort of piggyback onto that, would they not have the same access? Yes, of course, if they were able to do that. I don't know what the technical possibilities are concerning that, but anyone that has access to that technology would be able to invade your privacy easily.
And then a second thing, with the Information Decency Act, or whatever it was.
Communications Decency
Yes.
Act.
I forgot the name of it. Now, I think eventually the censorship will get to the point where certain four-letter words will be banned from the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
Entirely.
Right. That seems to be the goal of some people. But it seems to be, I mean, while you can control radio and television because you have to go through this elaborate bureaucracy to, like, even air something, the Internet is not like that. The Internet is decentralized and it's run by individuals. There is no broadcasting center. Everybody has the same power. And that's why it's impossible to actually regulate what somebody says. The only people that could come up with something like this are people that have absolutely no understanding of what the net is all about.
And also, did you know that certain portions of the human body, for right. anatomy, for, let's say, the sciences, cannot be posted on the Internet any longer because of that? They're officially banned.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's sort of what the law is saying. There was a point where talk of abortion was also something that was not allowed, but that's, I think, has been successfully thrown out of that bill, or at least not taken seriously. It just goes to show what certain mentalities desire and why it's important for us to not let a small group of people take control of something.
What online service was it that banned the use of the word breast on their chat room?
It was America Online.
Yeah, it was America Online. And then some women's group who was using, had a special interest group talking about, or a chat room talking about breast cancer, they weren't able to talk about their subject.
Yeah, and that made a few headlines, and I think a lot of people realize this. You know, you see the advertisements for Internet access today, and no censorship is always one of the primary things. People realize that it's important not to be censored. And like I said before, you know, nobody says they are a censor. Every political group thinks that censors are out to get them. And what we have to realize is that censors are out to get virtually everybody, and we have to realize, you know, who the censors are within us and on the other side, too. You know, there's censors everywhere. It's not a left-right thing. Okay, does that answer your question?
Yes, and, have you ever heard of that program called AOL?
Yeah, the program that allows you to get free access to America Online. I don't know what you would do with it, but yeah, apparently it's very popular. I don't think it works anymore.
About that program.
I'm sorry?
I think America Online should find the source code for this product
mm-hmm.
and incorporate certain features of it, like blocking out certain words, or blocking out viewing certain people's messages.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're someone who decided to make utilities like that for online services could make quite a deal of money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why doesn't America Online? So this thing that some 15-year-old in the middle of nowhere, maybe living in New York City or whatever, could design programs to do things that America Online can't.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. America Online is a big lumbering corporation that doesn't have much in the way of ingenuity, just like, you know, most big lumbering corporations do not have. I don't know. You know, we're talking about America Online here. It's not really the Internet. The Internet is something a lot more elaborate than you know, one company's version of electronic access. Anyway, thanks for the call. Thanks for the questions. Let's move on to another call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm Andy. Well, a few things.
Yes.
Is Bernie still there?
I hope so.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Bernie, I'm just curious. Are you monitored or charged for electricity use, and or are you limited in terms of what you can watch and the hours you can watch?
No, that's not the case at this prison. The prison where I was formerly before I was transferred here, it was Northampton County Prison in eastern Pennsylvania. They did shut off the electrical power to the cells at 11:30 each night, so you weren't permitted to watch anything after that date. But it wasn't restricted as far as what programming you could watch. I mean, it was just regular broadcast television.
Aren't they afraid, not necessarily you, but some of the inmates will just stay up all night watching TV and then not be able to perform their duties during the day?
That's why they shut things off at 11:30 at night and turn it back on again at 6:30. The outlets that you plug your TV into set into up there, We're all shut off.
And they're not afraid, like, you're going to try and short out the electrical system or do something with the electricity? Or...
Well, that has happened. People have tried to make what are things called stingers. It's like a device that heats up water so they can make hot tea or coffee in their cells, which is considered a big offense in that prison, and you go to the hole if you make one of those. But occasionally somebody would make one the wrong way and it would short out the electrical outlet, and then they could usually trace back to see which outlet it shorted out, and that person would just go to the hole for a few days.
Well, let me try and picture this. Your cell is just like a regular room, but instead of a wall, it's like the iron transparent bars, and like guards are like, you know, check you out every few minutes or something?
Well, up in Northampton County Prison, we were just talking about, it was a plate steel on all three walls, and the ceiling were plate steel, mm-hmm. like a battleship would be made out of it. These huge rivets hold it together, and the front wall of it was bars with a sliding gate made of bars. So you felt like you were in a, not unlike a cage in a zoo, exactly. But it was 5 feet by 8 feet, and maybe, I think about a nine-foot ceiling.
Well, it's still better than, like, concrete, I would assume, right?
Actually, no, the steel was very cold, so if you leaned up against it, it was pretty chilly. Concrete was probably a little better.
I'm just curious, what shows are you going to watch, or what's broadcast TV like where you're at? Do you have free networks?
I'm just outside of Philadelphia, so I imagine I can pick up the network affiliates, PBS.
What about radio?
I do have a radio now. Some other supporters are very kind enough to send me $2 to buy a radio. So now I'm very happily listening to NPR. Fortunately, I can't pick up Pacifica here.
This is sort of an esoteric question, but there was someone who used to be on BAI who has a kiddie show in Philly. I don't know if you ever tuned her in.
Who's that?
Kathy O'Connell.
Oh, yeah, I know Kathy.
Oh, you know? Yeah, we're all friends. Okay, two other things. Emmanuel, did you receive my letter last week because you didn't acknowledge or read it on the air? It was sort of the humorous letter signed to Somewhere Man.
Well, we receive hundreds of letters every week, and about 20 of those might be considered humorous.
Oh, I didn't know. If
yeah, well, it's ridiculous. I mean, we have to have a staff of people monitoring things here. But what was the gist of your letter?
Well, it was just like some humorous stuff. I had a question for Fiber, why there aren't any female counterparts in real life or on the show, like with exotic names like his, and just some one-liners. I had an idea
That might have gone into Fiber's possession. Unfortunately, he is away on assignment this week, and so we won't be hearing from him right now. But I'll direct the question to him, and perhaps he can comment on it.
My last thought before I make room for the next creature of the night, wasn't it the late visionary and hemp farmer Thomas Jefferson who once said that security at the expense of liberty will result in neither?
Yes.
So my ninth grade social studies.
He should have written rap songs, Ed.
Thomas
J. Yeah, he really had it down as far as that kind of thing.
All right, Don. Thanks for sending me the magazines. I appreciate it.
Okay, Bernie, take care. You're like part of my regular routine. And any word yet, like if you're going to get early release or anything? Or?
Well, there was another snag. Last week I went to find out what the latest chance of getting released is. And apparently I should be eligible to go into a minimum security facility and possibly get work release. But then this prison counselor told me there was a problem. When he pulled out my file, he said, you can't be approved for work release or minimum security because it shows here you have 4 outstanding arrest warrants for child support or lack of child support. And I looked at the guy and said, how can this be? I don't have any children. And he said, well, it says it right here on the computer for now that you have 4 outstanding arrest warrants for child support. I'm like, there's got to be a mistake.
Oh, boy.
I don't have any children. He said, are you sure you don't have any children? I said, yes, I'm sure. So he said he'd try to take care of it. So right now we're waiting to get that resolved somehow.
Do you think that's a hacker or someone from the Secret Service?
Yeah, it's got to be a hacker. Whenever somebody does have it, it's a hacker, you know.
Anyway,
please blame the hackers.
Take care and don't get involved in any of that good God, bad God politics. And take care, Emmanuel. Bye.
All right. Thanks for calling. Bernie, that is amazing. I mean, now they're coming up with these phantom children that they say that you're responsible for somehow. That's, I mean, it's really funny. I mean, you see the humor in this now, right?
I do. It's hard for me to laugh sometimes.
Yeah, I know.
When I know it affects my freedom. At the time, I was speechless when I first heard it, and it took me a few seconds to respond. That can't be. It's impossible. I don't have any children. And I never cleared up whether it was 4 separate child support warrants for 4 different children, or 1 for 4 children, or 2 for 2 children, or whatever. But if I get saddled with these kids, at least I hope they'll be good kids, although they're probably pretty...
Oh, yeah.
I never paid any child support.
Well, now, do you think that it's possible that the judge thought that you were this person that had 4 outstanding arrest warrants for child support?
I have no idea, Emmanuel. Anything is possible in this crazy system.
Because maybe that could account for why he you know, sentenced you so harshly.
Well, he didn't say anything about that. But who knows? I mean, that's a possibility. It appears that someone else's records got mixed up with mine here at this prison. But the council here is trying to get that resolved. It hasn't been done yet, but I'm hoping by the end of the week I will no longer have hungry children to feed that aren't mine.
I'd like to know, you know, how do you mix up someone's records and in prison? I mean, you'd think that they would be careful about that.
You would, but if you spend any time here, Emmanuel, you begin to realize how simple it could happen. It's just the bureaucracy is just rampant, and the place is a model of inefficiency.
All right, 212-279-3400. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hello?
Go ahead. Yes, it's you. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. Where I could complain against the long-distance company to what authorities?
Well, probably the Federal Communications Commission Common Carrier Bureau, which is located in Washington, D.C. What kind of problem are you having?
Well, I use Unidial, and they are in Atlanta, Georgia. And you see, they charge me on MasterCard. However, they never send me a statement about my long distance connections.
So they never sent you an itemized bill. They just billed your MasterCard.
No, and I keep calling them. They say, oh, tomorrow, and it never comes.
Uh-huh.
It's really frustrating.
Well, now, have you contacted MasterCard?
I will contact them and tell them that they shouldn't allow them to charge me.
Okay, yeah, that's what you have to do. Call MasterCard, say the charges have not been substantiated, and they will take it off your bill until any kind of proof is given. And if they don't give any proof, then it'll stay off your bill.
Uh-huh. All right, fine.
All right, good luck.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
212-279-3400. Good evening. You're on the air.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
Hi. All right, good luck.
This is great. That's good sound quality, too. But it's also 7 seconds ago, so let's join us in the present. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, excellent. Okay. I just wanted to call about several different issues, but the one that got my attention the most was the V-chip thing.
Uh-huh.
And the point that you were coming from, or the perspective that you were coming from, that it actually was a good thing and all that, I have a little bit of a counterpoint to that based on an article I read a couple months ago in an Adweek magazine, and the point that they were making is that in one respect this is going to stifle the creativity of the kinds of shows that they put on television, because of the fact that in order for the V-chip to work, they'll now have to rate every single show, and the ones that get the most violent rating will not be getting any type of sponsorship for advertising, because of the fact that once a television show has been rated, those companies that advertise on the shows now will have nowhere to turn if they get accused of patronizing what could be considered such a horrible television program. And before, when there was no rating system, they could always say, well, we never watched it, we never knew what was really on it. But now, if it's got that rating, the advertisers are going to have to know what that rating is before they're ever plunked down their first dime. And as a result of that, a lot of them are not going to, because of a bad name or whatever. And as a result, a lot of those shows that might actually be just realistic in depicting life probably will not be on television, really.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a chilling effect of having something categorized, like the warning stickers on CDs, the R rating in movies, and just, you know, self-censorship that we impose upon ourselves to avoid being categorized in a certain way. But, you know, it's a very complex thing. You have to wonder, how is this going to translate to things like syndication? You know, you have something that's rated in a certain way, and advertisers pay to be on that particular program. Like, let's say NYPD Blue, even though that show is I don't even consider that to be in the slightest bit objectionable. But you have a program like that, okay? You have advertisers that pay to be on there, and they know about the program. Now, what happens when that show becomes syndicated? You know, local TV stations are inserting their own local ads there, and you know, the sponsors aren't necessarily privy to what it is exactly that they're being aired during. And so it's a lot different when it goes down to a local advertiser. I mean, we have a phenomenal amount of ratings that are about to be made here on these on all these different shows. I don't know how it's going to translate over the years.
So the rating scheme hasn't really been developed yet. That'll be interesting how that pans out. But also, all the expense involved with rating these programs and keeping track of what's rated at what, so the advertisers, you know, this program is rated, all that's going to cost a lot of money, apparently. And the consumers are going to end up having to pay for that with higher advertising higher prices because the advertising costs are higher.
Yeah, and on another point, I wanted to get in like the last couple of weeks, but you did not mention this on your program, and I wanted to know if you were aware of it. On April 6th of this year, in the newspaper for New Jersey, the Star Ledger, there was a whole-page article on these two hackers out in California that were sentenced for stealing credit card numbers off of Tower Records' computer system. And I was just wondering, were you aware of this happening to begin with?
Well, let me just ask you, what, are you quoting a newspaper article that called those people hackers, or is there something else about this story?
No, well, actually, yes, I'm quoting them. They used the term hackers, but in a way, they were hackers in the sense that they originally broke into Tower Records' computer system. The way the story goes, and they've gotten fairly in depth with it,
mm-hmm.
is that they originally broke into the Tower Records computer system to be able to rent videos from a Tower Records video rental store near them,
mm-hmm.
and they originally used it for that. They stayed in there for like playing around in the system for like several months, and not several months, but about a month. And in Tower Records officials immediately called the Secret Service, and the Secret Service said that instead of plugging their security loopholes to wait and see what they would wind up doing. So what they did then was cataloged every single keystroke that they made. Every time they broke in, it said that Tower Records system administrators' pagers went off.
Mm-hmm.
And after a period of time, they came upon a file that wound up having credit card numbers in it. They downloaded the file, I guess, to look at it, and when they found out what it was, they said that the two individuals involved, who are actually fairly young, I think they're 21 and 19, said they were going to take it to the DEF CON convention in Las Vegas
uh-huh.
with them, and they wound up leaving it, though, at their house. They wound up not taking it with them, and while they went to the DEF CON convention, the federal government issued a search warrant to search their house. They both were planning to attend the University of California, one of the campuses. I don't remember right now.
Well, let me just ask you a question. Did they actually use the card numbers?
No, they didn't use the card numbers, but they felt that it was a criminal possession of individual credit card numbers because they had sorted them by expiration date, which means that they were planning to do something bad with them, which is totally fallacious as far as I'm concerned, but they wound up both being charged with felony counts of credit card fraud because of the fact that they had 1,500 credit card numbers altogether, and in legal parlance, each credit card number is supposedly worth $100, and
yeah,
therefore that
made
their thing $15,000.
Well, you know, it's interesting that the Secret Service would allow all that valuable information to be so vulnerable for so long a period of time. They took no precautions to lock it up or anything like that. They knew they were at risk, yet they just left it out there for somebody else to find and copy and do God knows what with. But, you know, I mean, it's a stupid thing to do, to mess around with credit card numbers and, you know, to mess around anything that's financial in nature. But if these guys didn't actually make any purchases with the credit card numbers, you can't treat it like they did. You know, it's a different thing. You have to, when someone makes that transition to actually stealing stuff, hey, that's a crime. It's easily recognizable. But if you just think that they had intent to do that, it's a far different thing because they haven't actually done anything yet. We're just about out of time. Bernie, did you have any comment on that? And then we gotta hit the road.
I just can say those kids are looking to a scary ordeal ahead of them. They're going to probably be looking at a serious amount of federal prison time. Each possession of each credit card can amount to a year or more in prison. they're going to do some time. It's unfortunate. And if they turned out not to have done anything with those credit card numbers, it's even more unfortunate that they're going to be in prison for a while.
Okay, Bernie, ask quickly your address so that people can write you.
Anyone wanting to send me books or magazines or letters of support, I'd appreciate it. It keeps me going every day here. You can send it to Ed Cummings, Cummings, at Bucks, Bucks, County Prison. The address is 1730 South Easton, that's Easton Road, number D13, that's D as David, it's my cell number, and that's in Doylestown,
TOYLESTOWN, TA18901. And thank you, everyone who's mailed me books, magazines, cards, etc. It really keeps me going. I appreciate it.
And if you want to send Bernie S. email, the address is berniess@2600.com. And if you want him to reply, attach your regular mail address to that, and he will try to reply as possible. Okay, that's going to pretty much do it for us here tonight. This is another edition of Off the Hook coming to an end. We'll be back again next week from 8 to 9 o'clock with the latest in the world of privacy, technology, phone companies, computers, and things like that. Till then, this is Emmanuel Goldstein. Have a good night.